when devotee practices spiritual life, he transcends the modes from tamogun. So how he actually transcends? He directly goes from ignorance to transcendental platform, or from ignorance to rajogun and rajogun to tamogun and then sattvagun?
Usually, if you're in tamogun to start with, if you've got some strong influence of tamogun on you, it may be theoretically possible to immediately transcend completely to the to the mode of pure goodness. But in practice, it usually takes some effort and time to recover from the influences of the mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance is not an advantageous platform to start your spiritual life from. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, even those in the mode of ignorance can be engaged in Krishna consciousness. But they can expect that it may take some time to achieve the perfection. So, yes, often we have to go through gradual stages. And gradually, even drop by drop, give up our material conditioning. Not only do we have to go through the phases, but those phases may take years or even decades to pass through.
Devotees like Hanumanji or Gajendra, they are, is the animal species mode of some of ignorance.
Hanuman, because he's a monkey? Is that what you mean?
It is generally that the animal species are in the mode of tamogun.
Generally, but yes?
Yes, they are acting on the transcendental platform.
Yes,
so
but
how,
yes.
So they did not show anything about mode of any symptom or symptoms of mode of goodness.
But Hanuman displayed symptoms of a great personality, practically from his very birth. So he wasn't ever acting like an ordinary animal. He may have been in a body that externally looked like that of an animal, but he's not really an animal like that, not in his consciousness. You may call him a monkey, but he's a monkey who's not in the mode of ignorance. Gajendra is another case. Gajendra was actually, because of committing offense, he fell down and took birth as an elephant. So he was a real elephant. But in his case also, he was able to retain his previous consciousness. At least it came back to him at the time of crisis. He was able to remember elegant prayers in Sanskrit and remember who to offer them to. So if you're that deeply covered by ignorance that you're an animal, you're actually an animal, you wouldn't be able to do that. I don't know any animals. Maybe someone has taught a parrot to say a few words in Sanskrit. But I don't think any parrot or any other animal in the world understands one word of Sanskrit. But Gajendra did. I don't think any animal in the world knows who the proper person to worship is. Although elephants, once in a while, the temple elephants have are very devoted to their deities. Once in a while. I think Gajendra also is a case of someone who was, not in ordinary animal consciousness, so you can't really say he was very much covered by ignorance either.
In general, devotees, they should gradually elevate themselves from mode of ignorance to rajogun and then nobody can, even practicing spiritual life, we cannot transcend more.
No, there's no limit. There's no speed limit. We can transcend as fast as we want. Yes, it may take some time. But you can accomplish it in a matter of months if you really want to. You can become situated in pure goodness very quickly. As fast as you're able to manifest the enthusiasm and the complete dedication, you can do it. I don't read in any shastra that it has to take a certain minimum amount of time to become fully Krishna conscious. You can do it in a very short time if you're eager enough. So you may have to go through the phases, but you can go through them quite quickly if you really want to get the results. Okay, anybody have something? Yes.
just like I was reading the fourth canto, when Jiva Maharaj, he was fighting with Ekshas, when Ekshas killed his brother. So there was in that he gets overcome by, he kills Ekshas those who are not supposed to be killed.
Yes.
So how to understand that, that although being a pure devotee, he gets overcome by the situation of
he became overcome by anger because they killed his brother, and he took revenge against even those yakshas who didn't kill his brother. That's called prejudice, when you blame a whole class of people for what's not everybody's fault. You know, a Muslim killed my father, therefore I won't be satisfied until all the Muslims are killed. Like that. You know, it's racial prejudice. And this Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj showed, you know, that fault. Yes. He's a living entity. He's not God. Even very great devotees are human. It's not that a devotee is incapable of ever having any fault. What makes him a pure devotee is that he's completely surrendered to his Supreme Lord. Only God is absolutely perfect. But whatever mistake a pure devotee makes, Krishna himself adjusts for it. Dhruva made a mistake, but by the Supreme Lord's arrangement, was it Manu who came?
Yeah.
So Dhruva's grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, came and preached to him, and he stopped doing the wrong thing. So, and that was by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord protects his devotee, even when the devotee makes some mistake, even a serious mistake, Krishna adjusts, corrects everything, and the devotee is saved. Pandavas also made mistakes, but they're very great, they're on the top of the list of great devotees. I don't have to get into examples of the mistakes the Pandavas made. You know, you can read about them in Mahabharata.
So those
Ekshas
who got killed, so how to understand in that way that they were supposed to be killed because of their previous karma, and then God is adjusting like that way?
Yeah. Yes, I mean, that's happening in ordinary life. People encounter one another and do things to one another, but it's each person's individual karma that's being acted out. So whatever happened to each of those yakshas is his own karma, as you say. But to be killed by a pure devotee is a great blessing. I'm sure they benefited by that. What, you know, I don't know the story exactly what happened to those dead yakshas, but I'm sure that it wasn't bad what their future destination was. Okay. Yeah. Something else?
Devotional service, as we are practicing years together, it's, at least I'm observing there are stages when you are really high. You feel you are very enthusiastic and all. There are stages when you are really down, then you have to really fight with your moods and this way. So this keeps on happening. So when we are high, we are very enthusiastic to practice. But especially when the moods overcome, we find it really difficult. So how we should struggle and we should maintain and try to make at least steady thing. How we should go about that.
Yes. What does Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur call that? And, which? There's another. I think there's another one. Anyway, there's another one that means like hot and cold. Yeah, that, you know, you're up and you're down. Yeah, constantly. You know, feeling elated, feeling depressed, feeling like you know, you're on top of the world, everything's succeeding, and then feeling the opposite of it next minute. Better to let your devotional service become more mature and rise above that. In the meanwhile, one can persevere on the basis of having strong knowledge, tattva jnana. When you're, you know, Krishna says, of all the persons who, the neophytes, the four kinds of neophytes, the jnani is the best. If you have knowledge, even as a raw neophyte, if you know and you understand philosophically what the reason why you should be, what are the reasons why you should be executing Krishna consciousness, and why you really don't have a choice. If I don't do this, I won't succeed in my life and I won't be happy. Then, even when you're experiencing disappointment and difficulties, you'll persevere on the strength of knowledge. If your devotional service is motivated by sentiment and you don't have much knowledge, then you'll only do it when it feels good. And when it inevitably at some time doesn't feel good, you'll give up. But one with sufficient knowledge will persevere despite suffering frustration. Gyanam labdva param shantim nachirena digacchati. Before Krishna gets into a serious discussion of pure devotion, he describes knowledge. This is back in the 5th chapter. Gyanam labdva param shantim nachirena digacchati. Actually, that's 4th chapter. Yeah. Then Jnana Yoga is discussed more in detail in the 5th chapter. If you become fixed in knowledge, it will burn away your contamination. Knowledge means here, knowledge of how you are spirit soul. I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul. That is the minimum knowledge. You can go beyond that and realize that not only am I spirit soul, but I'm Krishna's servant. And you can go beyond that. Not only am I a servant of Krishna, but I can actually realize which particular servant of Krishna I am and what my loving exchange with him, what my rasa is, that you can discover that. That's the highest knowledge. But it begins, spiritual knowledge begins with understanding, I'm not this body, I'm a pure spirit soul. If you have that knowledge that destroys your contaminations, yablabva chaparam labam manyate nadikam tataha, having achieved that such knowledge, you think that nothing, you actually become convinced that there's nothing better to gain. Yasmin stitto nadukena gurunapi vichalyate. And being fixed in that transcendental knowledge that you're not this body, even the most terrible suffering cannot dissuade you, cannot stop you from persevering. So that's what we need to make sure at least that we don't give up the process. We have to understand philosophically why we're doing what we're doing. I think that's why you're sitting here every day for several hours a day, not just because there's nothing else to do, but because you want to gain this strong knowledge.
But in some cases, just like Krishna says, you know, Arjuna, avratam jnanam etena. Sometimes it happens that knowledge gets covered over when the boat's overpowered, like that. So then we know all the knowledge, we have heard it and all these things. But still, we are not able to fight with the bigger.
So there's a question there, what to do?
So how is different way or what to really?
You mean if your knowledge just fails you, what to do then? Call for help. Yeah. Hopefully there's a god brother, you know, nearby who can remind you of what Krishna spoke in the Bhagavad Gita. Devotees should enlighten one another when they fall into depression, discouragement. Their godbrother should help them out of it, philosophically especially. there's a point. I mean, we reach sometimes a point where we just can't, or we can't drum up any enthusiasm, and our intelligence doesn't work. So that's when we need some encouragement from others and some preaching. If we can, we should pick up the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says so many things in the Bhagavad Gita to lift us out of that depression. Arjuna was in such a depression. Vishidan tam. That means he was depressed. Vishidan. Sat down on his chariot, threw away his bow and arrows, and said, "No, I won't clean up the temple." Then he had to be preached to. That's what we may need in such a situation, to be, you know, for the Bhagavad Gita to be spoken again. That's what Bhagavad Gita is for. Okay. Yes, bro. Yeah, it's also an offense against the holy name. But it's just our conditioning. You know, we just have to keep on chanting. We may find ourselves falling asleep while chanting. It's called laya. You know, annihilation, or just, you know, the dissolution of the universe is called laya. But when you fall asleep while chanting, Vishnu Chakravarti calls that laya also. I know one sannyasi who used to fall asleep while giving class. But it's just our conditioning. You know, we continue the process, we keep on chanting, keep on serving, and eventually we won't be doing that anymore. It's just residual influence of, you know, it's mode of ignorance that puts us to sleep. Or you're talking more generally about all sorts of distraction.
Everywhere, like by doing services also, after some time, we completely forget that why we are doing this and what purpose is there.
Well,
even while
yes.
chanting, if we pay attention, so how we will be inspired?
We shouldn't become discouraged. We should be encouraged with the conviction that I just continue doing it, and I'll rise above this sloth and inattention. Have faith in the process and just continue. There's one story. You may have heard it, I don't know. The Prabhupada sent, in the very early years, sent one devotee to the market to get cauliflower. And the devotee came back lamenting. "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm so much in Maya. I was supposed to be, you know, doing this service for you, but I was just seeing all the things in the street, thinking about everything, and, you know, not about my service." And Prabhupada had just one question for him. "Did you bring the cauliflower?" And he said yes. And Prabhupada said, "Well, you did the service. Be satisfied." So we just do our service. Krishna will be satisfied and we'll be purified. And we'll be able to do it better and with more attention, the more we practice. Something else? Yes.
Though, is there some solution for inattentiveness during the morning program session, like, you know, Mangalarti? Like, many times we're studying from the deities, and sometimes they forget that the deities are present there.
Well, maybe getting to sleep earlier the night before. Maybe if we can't stay awake during the morning program, maybe we're staying up too late, or not getting enough rest in general.
That's also there, and sleep is also that one factor.
Yes.
Another factor is inattentiveness. Eyes are open.
Yes.
But, mind is just wandering everywhere.
Well, that can be because of lack of attention, or attention, too much attention on something else. we should make up our mind that the japa period belongs to japa. That better do your rounds and do them properly before doing anything else. You have to manage our time in the sense of you know, give the proper time for each thing. The japa should have its proper time that belongs to the japa and not to anything else. And we should, you know, train our minds up to respect that principle. And, you know, thoughts may creep into the mind, but we shouldn't just allow them to take over. We have to practice, you know, avoiding inattention comes by practice. And by the intelligence ruling over the mind and telling it that, you know, that this is not the time for other things. By having a regular, well, I don't have a right to preach to anybody here about having a regular program, but that just philosophically, the way to regulate the mind and the senses is to live very regularly, to follow a very regular schedule. That brings the mind under control. You're talking about a situation where you're already doing that, but still, you know, there's inattentiveness. Then all you can do is continue practicing. Okay. Yeah.
How to develop this prayerful mood, especially in front of deities?
Prayerful mood. Be aware of who you're standing in front of. Sometimes we forget. We may be enjoying ourselves in front of the deities, dancing very wildly. And not even paying attention to the deities. So, first thing to have a prayerful attitude is to remember who you're standing in front of and who you are. You're the servant and he's the master of the house. So the servants who want to keep their job follow the principle, the etiquette of how to behave in front of their master. You know, he's the proprietor and we're his servants. And therefore, we should always behave properly in front of him. When he's there, standing there, taking darshan, you know, we're thinking that we're coming to get a view of the deities. But the real thing is, he opens the curtains to look at us and see what we're up to. You know, we're the ones being looked at. So, you know, taking that into consideration, you may think, well, he's just a statue. You know, his eyes aren't blinking. But actually, he's looking at us, and being aware of that, we should automatically try to behave properly.
Especially like during the morning program, you know, this art, you are conscious of that. But apart from that, when the question comes to you, offer obeisances, but after that, prayers to the deities, your personal prayers.
Yes.
So that time it becomes a little difficult. When you are at the Association of Devotee and when the regular program is going on.
Yes, that time I understand, yeah. And then other times, well, okay, but there's no great crime. You know.
We should worry about this, you know, second part.
Yes. I mean, you're serving the deity by going about your daily service. You may have to run by the deities on the way to jumping into a van to go out and do some preaching, but you're doing it to serve the deities. You don't have to feel guilty. You can take 1 second to offer your obeisances and be satisfied that the deities are happy that you're going out, to, you know, running off to do some service for them. Everything we do is the service of the deities. So it's not that you have to be standing in front of them 12 hours a day reciting prayers. They're less satisfied with that than someone who's actively engage in spreading the Krishna consciousness. Okay, so the most prayerful thing to do is go out and preach. Yeah.
Sometimes we get carried away in doing our service.
Yes.
So, one of the factors, of course, while chanting, when we, when I doze off or something, when chanting is affected, one of the factors will be due to services, lot of services or late nights or something like that.
Okay.
So we understand that we have to, whatever we are doing, the goal should be that our chanting should be nice. Our purpose is basically to improve our chanting. But if the service itself, because of our inattentiveness or something,
then the service may distract from the chanting? Yes.
How we should try to balance?
Well, the preaching work is very important. So sometimes we do have to make some sacrifice in having a peaceful sadhana for the sake of carrying out the mission of the spiritual master. It doesn't mean we can not chant our 16 rounds, but we may not be able to chant them with as peacefully and with as full attention as would have been possible otherwise. But I just know of many instances when devotees came to Prabhupada to confess this and complain about it, Prabhupada told them, you know, as long as you just chant your 16 rounds and go about your service, that's what satisfies Krishna the most. And in the long run, by getting the blessings of your spiritual master and of Krishna, those blessings will open up the door to full concentration. So that we're struggling, you know, we're having problems now because we're too busy. But that being busy will earn the blessings that will give you full enlightenment. Better to struggle now and enjoy in the future. Work now, samadhi later. Okay. Well, it's 3:55. Maybe we should just stop. Let everybody get ready for Harinam. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.